Welcome and everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. Christmas is just around the corner of the holiday season for us all, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's on a championship high, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
It feels good, Gerald. And I think I speak for all Texas fans who've had a little heartbreak, a little up, a little down, a lot of down. It feels good to fully drink the Kool-Aid. I feel like you and I both this year tried to temper expectations. And, hey, if we make it to the Big 12 championship game, that'd be great. You know, it's where we have to be. And, hey, if we get to 10 wins, that'd be great. You know, that's progress from 8 last year. That's moving forward. Hey, college football playoffs, it's a little bit much, guys. You know, don't buy into the hype. Like, just wait and see, wait and see. Well, we've waited, Gerald, and we saw. It's time. I'm drinking Kool-Aid. It's burnt orange flavored. There's one, possibly two games left, and they're both in the college football playoffs. It's time just to lean all the way in, be obnoxious, pump the sunshine. Here it comes, baby.
I mean, we were on this podcast 4 months ago, hedging our bets, saying that, you know, Texas could still win the Big 12 with three losses, right? Texas could still win the Big 12 with three losses. And then this time last week, we were like, well, if Texas wins, do they have a shot at the college football playoff? And both of those things actually happened. Texas went to Arlington, to Jerry World, and closed out their time in the Big 12 the way that they started it, with a football championship. Texas absolutely demolishes Oklahoma State, and it was a lopsided 49-21, and it honestly didn't even feel that close as well. It didn't really feel like a 28-point game when the chips were down. But Texas rolls Oklahoma State en route to winning a Big 12 championship for the first time since 2009, which is also the last time Texas played for a national championship. There's a lot to talk about here, but Kyle, as someone, like, we've talked about this, we started this podcast during the Charlie Strong years. You and I have been around for Texas at some of its lowest lows, right? We were there for some of the high highs, but we were also there for some of the low lows. I guess somebody who's been around the block and really been deeply invested in this program, man, it feels, is it as cathartic for you as it is for me to sit here on the other side of this?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Saturday was great. Like, it was pretty great coming out of a win from Washington the night before. And, you know, I was talking to, had a friend staying at the house this weekend, and he's a Texas fan, but married into it. His wife went to UT, and he's taken it with a plum, but he was asking questions and basically said, what does Texas need to do? And it was just win, baby, you know. And it was, to see them do what they needed to do, right? To see them go out, and it's like, all they have to do really here is just win decisively. Go out. Everyone knows they're the better team. Go out and show it. Don't choke. Don't, you know, overthink it. Don't, you know, break from habit or tradition. Go out and be the team you've been for, you know, 4 months, 3 months, and they did. They showed everything we wanted to, and that ultimately led to the catharsis, I think, in the game. Sure, it was great. The Big 12 championship, it was the end of, you know, the Hateful Eight redemption tour. They beat every single one of the original Hateful Eight, which is tremendous. You know, the end of no one gets scoreboard over here, right? The way it even included Oklahoma State. The game was catharsis, but I think something about that selection, when the drama was on, it's like, could we still be left out? You know, There was a lot of Texas fans. You could feel that almost Battered Aggie syndrome has sunk in over the years, where it was like, well, we're still going to get left out. Florida State, now they're going to get in, and you know, Bama. There was many scenarios. So that moment, and I've seen videos all over the internet of it, of seeing Texas picked in the playoff committee, like a validation of hopes and wants and dreams of a decade plus, right? A long time. It felt really, really nice to have this game, and then again to ultimately get the outcome from it.
Yeah, I mean, this was especially being against Mike Gundy and having, you know, Texas needing to get that streak broken and all of those things, right? Like, it would just felt super cathartic. It felt like you could relax. I was clinched up most of the week. Like, let's just be real here, because you know what? It's Mike Gundy. Anything could happen. And then Texas came out and absolutely freaking cruised, right? Quinn Ewers started 12 for 12 for three touchdowns, right? Like, absolutely had the game of, literally the game of his career. The defense did what the defense does every week, and it just felt not just for us, but it felt like the players, it was cathartic as well. So many of those guys, the seniors on this team and the guys who came back, like Jordan Whittington, came back for an extra year, right? This is what they came back for. And so getting to see them have that moment and enjoy it was just great. You know, they are more invested, obviously, than you and I are, because they're out there, you know, putting their bodies on the line. But, you know, seeing that moment of Jalen Ford celebrating, or Jordan Whittington talking about how he said at media days that they were going to be back, right? And for that trophy. So, like, those moments are just what makes it really, really worth it. Now, on the field, Texas did absolutely everything they needed to do, got some style points for it. Quinn Ewers set the Big 12 championship game record with 452 yards and tied the touchdown record with four touchdowns, becomes just the fifth player in school history to pass for more than 400 yards. Absolutely just masterwork from him. And Sark was deep in his bag early. Richard Johnson on the split zone duo Hurry Up over the weekend called Sark's play calling like tossing yourself a alley-oop off the backboard in a lot of ways. And that's really what it felt like so often. Like, Sark was just in his bag, deep in his bag. Some of the double reverse pass and the screen that he ran a couple of times, like, just, it felt like everything he called worked well. And this really is what it looks like when Sark has his type of quarterback, Sark has his type of team, and they're all playing in lockstep with each other. Like, the offense just hummed. At least the passing game just hummed.
Absolutely. It was great to see. This is what we expected the passing game to look like. I think many people predicted Quinn would just throw for 400 yards a game with the weapons he had, and not that that should have happened every game, but you saw it. You saw it realized. You saw a team that, you know, seemed to gear up and say, you're not going to, you know, get 45 points on us the way UCF did, and really wanted to stop the run. And so Texas said, okay, that's fine. We'll throw a lot to our tight end when we need it, and Jordan Whittington on third downs, and we'll let, you know, the two best receivers in the Big 12 go out and work you on the outsides, whether that's deep or short or with, you know, humiliating routes where Adonai Mitchell just, you know, broke a guy's entire soul on a route to get wide open, right? And just let Quinn put the ball on him, right? He had one play where he didn't see a guy underneath and threw an interception that honestly gave them an extra touchdown, you know, that made it close because it was deep in our territory. But I'm not going to hold that against him. He quickly atoned and had a great game, you know, hit some of the deep throws, hit everything short underneath on time and where we needed. Even had a little run the first time we've seen him scramble. I think a month off for him is about as good for anyone, right? I'd love to see him healthy and feeling, you know, 100%. If you can throw for 450 yards, I think you're probably feeling pretty good. And that many yards, and you got both backup quarterbacks in, right? We got not just a Quinn show, but Malik got in and Arch got in. Like, this is what we've been wanting all year, and it's crazy that our easiest kind of, like, blowout to fans formula how games should have gone throughout the year came in the championship game for the first time. So yeah, I mean, Quinn said he did it for Bevo's cousin. What an ugly ordeal that was during the week. Just another kind of thing off the field that I'm glad this team doesn't seem to be distracted by things off the field. They seem to be motivated by them and find it where you need it, right? Georgia once said no one believed in us when no prognosticator picked them more to lose more than one game. You just got to find that chip and put it on your own shoulder. Speaking of shoulders, Gerald, the running game wasn't as, you know, there was no Jonathan Brooks, and we'll talk about that one, but, you know, it had been good in his stead. This was kind of by committee, but there was one guy who I thought just looked like a dude who wanted it, who put the team on his shoulders, and it was Keelan Robinson, the Pro Football Focus highest graded running back of any team who played on championship weekend. I mean, he looked like a guy who just wasn't going to let Texas lose, and it's great to have a couple of those different guys on the team.
Yeah, I mean, 68 yards on two carries will do that for you, right? Just two carries, 68 yards, two scores will get you a good grade. Keelan Robinson really is an example, and I'm going to talk about this in my Bang the Drum, of like the culture that Sark has tried to instill of like playing for each other and like waiting for your moment and like really being ready for that. Because CJ Baxter struggled. Again, I feel like it's been, I'm not sure what's going on with CJ Baxter. I think it's just he's a freshman. 13 carries, 43 yards and a score. Jaden Blue as well. It really seemed like Baxter and Blue really struggled as Oklahoma State loaded the box. And so Keelan took advantage of some of those misdirections and some of the schemes. And obviously he's probably the fastest guy on, like, he and Worthy are probably your two fastest guys, right? Like, I would put them at
is doing a lot of lifting there. That is the graded as the highest fastest receiver as far as miles per hour reached in Xavier Worthy, and the highest miles per hour reached this season in all of college football, Jaden Blue.
There you go. So, like, those are, like, and again, Keelan's up there with them, right? He's probably a couple of steps behind them, but, like, he took advantage of some of those seams. But, I'm curious to see, because Texas is going to need that against Washington, which we'll talk about in just a minute. They're going to need something, and I don't think, you know, I don't know what Washington's defense is. You know, they really showed up big against Oregon over the weekend, but, you know, Jaden Blue has shown that he's a guy who is always a step away from popping one, which I appreciate. CJ Baxter looked like he might be banged up, but Texas now has like a month until they're able to play again, so they should have a lot of bodies back. Offensive line only allowed one sack, gave up six tackles for loss, which was an uptick for them. But overall, just a solid performance, and the Oklahoma State defense didn't really ever seem to have an answer for what Texas wanted.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it this is Texas offense almost fully realized, right? I do think a running game would have a little bit more balance. Again, I say that, right? Let me step back and say, oh no, Texas only ran for 198 yards in this game, right? Like, I'm not going to belittle the running game at all. The passing game just was more available the way that Oklahoma State's defense lined up. But nonetheless, this was pretty close to Texas offense fully realized, the Sark vision fully realized. Great offensive line play, spreading the ball around, playmakers who are home run threats, guys who can be dependable with good hands, and athletes all over the field where you can't really decide. You pick your poison, right? You give up 350 yards passing in the first half because you've chosen your poison, and it's a deadly one. A.D. Mitchell was phenomenal in this game. He had a touchdown catch, had a 62-yard bomb. Jatavion Sanders, 8 catches off 9 targets, had 100 yards and a touchdown. Like, he was really those two were the main threats. Worthy also, 6 catches for 86. A lot of that came on a big 54-yarder. But Whittington moved the chains, 4 for 48. And then there was one, I mean, even though the stat sheet doesn't really jump out at you, 1 catch for 2 yards, 1 Heisman pose. That's for, of course, the big loaf, Tavondre Sweat. Striking the Heisman was just such a move, such a flex, such a beautiful, beautiful play. If he doesn't win the Heisman, which we saw today, he wasn't named as a semifinalist somehow, he certainly should at least be in line for the Heisman.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, like, he's going to win probably at least one major postseason award outside of the Big 12. But yeah, like, getting him that moment, it was just kind of emblematic of the culture and everything that Sark is trying to build. Speaking of Tavondre Sweat, the defense, Ollie Gordon came into the game yapping and found out the inverse relationship between, or I guess the direct correlation between messing around and finding out, right? Tavondre Sweat, the defensive player of the year, had more touchdowns than the Big 12's offensive player of the year. Texas held Ollie Gordon to 34 yards on 13 carries. It was his worst rushing performance since he took over as a full-time starter in week 4. This is the worst overall rushing performance by by Oklahoma State since Baylor in 2015. And Oklahoma State had only gone under 300 yards two previous times this year. Ollie Gordon was averaging a 131 coming off a 5-touchdown performance. Like, what are the things that makes these elite programs? And you mentioned it, right? Georgia's ability to just, like, everybody doubted me, right? And it was just because, like, a teacher gave them a B, or, like, they didn't get an extra scoop of tater tots in the chow hall, right? Everybody doubted us. And, like, Texas is turning into some of that, where it's like they were all tweeting at Ollie Gordon. How did they know about that video? They should have been in pregame, right? How did they know about? So, like, I just love the ability of this team to get themselves going for the game and creating extra motivation in a situation where it doesn't need it, and scoring some style points that it really feels like, especially this defense, is playing its best ball at the right time.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a well-placed staffer who's just monitoring social media. It's like, look, guys, we're a couple minutes before the game, and we still need a little motivational chip on these guys' shoulders. I don't know how they saw that, but if you didn't see the clip, Ollie Gordon was hopping around yelling, F Texas, before the game, which Gerald has said many times, right? And it's confirmed. We know Mike Gundy, his entire, you know, purpose of coaching is to, you know, obviously try to beat OU, which he hasn't done a ton, but he saves a lot of it for the Texas game, where he can, you know, tell half of his roster at least, which is from the state of Texas, how Texas didn't want them and didn't recruit them, get them frothing at the mouth, get them motivated, and have them play their best game of the season against Texas has historically been what's happened. And so I get it, right? I'm not blaming Ollie Gordon. I'm sure, you know, Gundy was in his ear, and that's what Oklahoma State's classy coaches do. And so I'm, you know, but the kid went out, and if you're going to say F Texas, and then you're going to get, you know, 13 carries for 34 yards, you may have some Texas who respond in kind, letting you know, right? And this was, there was a nice padding for Oklahoma State's 281 yards. That's the, of course, 89 that came in the fourth quarter against the second
and
third string.
Yeah, don't forget that second unit. Don't forget that third unit.
They're sub 200 heading into the fourth quarter, right? It's they're, you know, averaging 3 yards a play in both the second and third quarters. They still didn't, you know, convert a third down, which I loved after the first quarter. So good on the I guess the second and third units. They only had one third down, but in the fourth quarter, but they kept them from converting on it, right? It's blown out. Like, I think if you didn't watch the game, like, oh, Texas won pretty well, pretty handily. No. This could have easily been a 70, you know, type, was the Colorado, you know, 60 some odd point victory if they really wanted it to. They didn't need to. They proved their point, and then they, you know, put Arch Manning in, and that's great, and that's awesome. And the Savion Red and Trey Wisner, right? Think about Jonathan Brooks being hurt. You're talking about running backs like 5 and 6th on the original depth chart out there just carving them up in the fourth quarter. It was great. Second offensive line looking good. Like, it was a win that felt good. You're right, Gerald. Catharsis. I couldn't stop smiling. It was fun. It was what it was supposed to be. I mean, these, whatever happens the rest of the year, this Big 12 championship, this end to the conference, this literal championship belt that was slung over Quinn's shoulder that they get to take with them. I believe, you know, Ric Flair got to do that, right? Took a belt with him out of WCW, I think, when he left, and they had to redesign the belt because he just didn't give it back. And that's basically what Texas has done here, right? They've taken the belt and they're taking it with them, and they did it in the most Texas way. We've wanted them to lean in a little bit, to be a heel, to be a little, you know, if they're gonna, everyone hates Texas, let them hate you, embrace the hate. If they're gonna say you're pompous and arrogant, be a little bit, but, you know, back it up. Like, I don't know. It just felt like a lot of buildup for a lot of years to get to that moment.
Texas has done a good job of leaning into it in the past years, but hasn't done a lot to back it up. A couple of quick hitters. Bert Auburn snapped his field goal streak, missed a 44-yarder. Texas didn't have to return, or didn't get a returnable punt all day, and only received the ball. Texas only received the ball 3 times. Everything else was obviously going the other direction. 33 first downs to 13. 10 of 13 on third downs for the offense. Time of possession. Most lopsided time of possession game of the year. Texas got most of that. I think the fourth quarter number was something silly like 14, like it was like 10 to 5 or something. They almost doubled them up late in the game. And then finally, Kyle, the belt is still in Austin. Undertaker with the help of several other WWE superstars that I don't know, presented the MVP belt. I actually know most of them, but I don't remember who they were. Undertaker gives him the belt for the MVP. Bret Yormark gets booed as Texas fans boo him, chant SEC, gets so flustered, he pulls a John Travolta as he gives Sark the trophy.
Yeah, yeah, he called him, I believe, Adel Mazim. No, he called him Coach Garzizian or something along those lines, Garcesian, twice. You could tell he was nervous and shaky. He tried to play it off, right? And it was funny to watch. The camera panned on the other wrestlers a couple different times who, again, are used to the scripted heat, the scripted heel, you know, turn when someone's working the crowd. I think, Gerald, you joke, the only thing, you know, more WWE would have been if Sark just said what after his every word with the crowd chanting behind him. You know, it was great. Like, it was exactly what they wanted when they brought the wrestlers there, but it was fun to watch as it panned to their face and they looked a little like, why is the crowd working so well? Like, usually you don't, in real life, non-WWE broadcast, get a crowd that's so unified and unanimously against someone.
None of them knew why he was getting so much heat. It was beautiful.
Correct. It was, they were wondering how they could drum up that much. Like, it was really the stuff of legend. I thought it was perfect. I won't mention, you know, the single human being alive I know who happens to be in a group chat with us. But I thought it was perfect. The fans booing him at every point. He tried to embrace it multiple. Okay, I get it. It's love. But then I think a really, really well-timed SEC chant. Like, don't overuse the SEC chant. Like, that's probably the one time, guys. Like, just that was it. That was the perfect deployment of it to the Big 12 commissioner in the moment when you've just won the title from him. Was gorgeous. Thank you, everyone, for doing that. Thank you for, you know, the commitment to booing the man, not letting up. It was great. I loved it. He deserved it. I think they stoked it well by playing that video against Texas Tech. Like, credit to Del Conte, credit to the athletic department. Like, they've kind of played this thing like a fiddle. Like, they've just played it perfect all through the season. And that was such a reward. Like, that was as good a 5 minutes of TV as I may have ever seen.
I mean, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And again, I was talking to Albie Shore, and Albie, our friend from Tech, like, Yormark very clearly was like Vince McMahon as the heel back in the Raw as War days of the 90s and 2000s. But speaking of a war, Podstradamus continues to be one. Kyle tied it up. Texas hit more than 8 big plays and won the turnover battle. They did. Yeah, Keelan Robinson won it for it. No, I was just joking. And then I had Texas with more than 150 on the ground. But Texas only got 2 tackles for loss in this game, which was a little bit surprising, but that's okay. So it's all tied up heading into the CFP. Texas gets jumped to number 3 in the CFP. They will take on Washington. So a running back of the Alamo Bowl. I made that joke earlier in the year, like, what if, and it actually is. So we've already hit up our friend Gaby Lucas, who will be on with us in a couple of weeks to help us preview that game. We've got until January. We've got a whole month to do it, so it'll be fun. So Texas caps off at Simon the Big 12 with another trophy. Now it's part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40, and let's jump to another team that ended their time in the Big 12 with a trophy. The number 5 volleyball team cruised to the Sweet 16 after dropping the opening game to Texas A&M, won the next 3 in dominating fashion, and then swept SMU 3-0 to advance to the regional. Got a tough regional draw, but a good opening weekend from the ladies.
Yeah, absolutely. Asia O'Neill had her first double-double of the season at a timely point against those Aggies. 14 kills, 10 blocks. She hit 538 and added 4 digs. She's on one on her own personal victory tour, you know, on senior day when she posted about, you know, she couldn't find a way to get more than 6 years here. She would love to, you know, it was kind of sad to think that she's done, and man, she's going out with a bang. Maddie Skinner was great in the first game, 20 kills in the SMU sweep, had 21 kills. So she was huge, as you would expect. Ella Swindle in her first NCAA tournament match showed why she transferred, came to Texas with her 6th double-double of the season, 35 assists and 10 digs, 5 blocks, 4 kills there. Just all in all, they hit great against SMU, 446. I think after that first loss, they never got closer than like 17 between the Aggies and the Mustangs in the ensuing 6 sets where Texas just was dominant. So, maybe a little wake-up call, and now they'll sweep through. But as Gerald mentioned, a tough bracket. There's a couple teams standing currently in the way of Stanford-Texas match that I'm sure every volleyball fan has circled on their calendars and has enormous Director's Cup implications.
So yeah, Texas has not an easy road to make it back. They've got Tennessee on Thursday, and then if they win that one, they'll take on the winner of Arizona and Stanford. So Director's Cup implications there, but a tough road. Texas has to face some giants, and if they get past them, well, it's just probably Louisville and Pittsburgh waiting for them there. The other ladies team that's doing big work, hoping to bring another trophy back. Texas dominates ORU in the middle of the year, number 10 women, and then absolutely crush number 11 UConn in front of a sold-out crowd to get its first win over UConn and the best start since the 2015-2016 season.
Yeah, 9-0. You know, they're looking great. They just moved up to number 5 right before we're recording this. So that's where Vic wants this team, and they're playing like one of the best teams in the country. I mean, it was outmatched. UConn had a run late to get it, you know, close in the fourth quarter, but it was really Texas's game the entire game. 15-3 run to start, you know, to open the game. 41-27 in halftime. They did what Texas does, which is, you know, they won the turnover margin and points off turnovers, right? They create turnovers, and they efficiently get out and score on those. They currently lead the NCAA in turnover margin. But this was a Rory Harmon game. Rory Harmon is announcing herself not just as one of the best players in the country, which she has been, but, you know, legitimately placing her stake for the best two-way player in the country, bar none, right? There may be people who put up a few more points because she often focuses on facilitating the offense, but there's no one who guards, you know, 90 feet end-to-end and also just runs for 40 minutes. I think she may have played 39. She got a little breather in this one. But, you know, she is everything for this team and everything they need her to be, right? She's 27 points, 13 assists. Contributed via score or assist on 22 of 31 made baskets for UT. She's the first player in ever to record 25 seasons to record 25 points and 10 assists against UConn. That's basically the entirety of their dynasty. She's the first player to do that. She basically this week almost had a triple-double in the game prior to it, two rebounds away against Oral Roberts. She's locked in, and she's looking you know, like a first-team All-American National Player of the Year, you know, shortlist player. And the only player on the court with Paige Buchers and all of the talent that UConn has on their team, Aaliyah Moore included, Madison Booker was the only one who really even looked to be on her same level. The freshman looks like an absolute phenom.
Absolutely, right? Like, she continues to be and put herself in position, Rory does, for like player of the year consideration at the end of the year, right? Maddie Booker had a season high 20 with three rebounds and four assists, two steals, averaged 18.5 this week, shooting upwards of 56, almost 57%. Great week for her. Texas wants to continue the run, keep the run going, probably will. Up next, Long Beach State on Wednesday at the Moo. Check that one out. Probably won't have 10K in attendance, but that's okay. On the men's side, number 16 men's basketball outlasted Texas State 77-58. Texas State tried to make this one interesting, had a 14-0 run before the half and a 16-2 run to open the second half, but Texas managed to battle back and get that one put away, setting up a pivotal matchup coming up this week.
Yeah, it was a game of spurts, like a post Taco Bell evening, a game of runs. It was Texas holding them for the final 4 minutes that really kind of made the score even look as impressive as it was. It was close. I don't know if they were looking ahead already, but Max Asemus came to play, 5-for-12 from deep, a season high 26 points, season high 6 assists. Other than that, there was a lot of guys. I think they had 5 players in double digits in this one, but just didn't have that level of consistency that you expect. Almost like they took this one for granted. Dylan Mitchell and Shedrick both had 11 point, 11 rebound double doubles. Love the symmetry there. But yeah, as Gerald alluded to, there's a big one this week. There is a, after last week going completely unbeaten, a perfect week, including, of course, a college football a Big 12 championship, but a perfect week. The main thing standing between Texas and achieving that again is Shaka Smart. And it is a big one. This is one of the best matchups in college basketball this season.
Yeah, this is like the marquee game, I think, of the non-conference schedule for most teams, right? Texas heading up north to cap off, actually, I think, the Big East Big 12 battle this Wednesday, taking on Shaka Smart and the 6-1 number 3 ranked Marquette Golden Eagles. Big matchup for Texas. I'm sure Shaka doesn't have any sort of extra motivation in this one to beat Texas, but Shaka's a good dude. Now, taking it to the track and field season. Feels like we were just talking about this, but indoor events are happening. Texas won 6 events at the season opener in Louisville.
Yeah, it's the only good thing anyone could watch in Louisville. Hopefully you didn't watch the football team try to play Florida State, because that was horrendous. But at the same time that was happening, where Louisville football was setting the game back a few years, the track team was getting ready to set this year off. Both the men's and women's teams came out strong. Amelia Chatfield won the 60-meter hurdles. Freshman Akayla Garrett is a name to listen to. She won the 500-meter run with the third fastest time in Texas history, which again is a freshman's first meet, getting her legs under. She finished second as well in the 60 meters. So she's a name to watch. It's hard to replace someone who just doesn't lose at all, as we had in Julian Alfred last year. But Akayla Garrett could be someone for a few years who does a lot of great things for Texas. And then on the women's side, Kendrick Smallwood, and remember the men have a Smallwood and a Blackwood who both run the same event. Always cracks me up. But Kendrick Smallwood won it with the 60-meter hurdles, the number six all-time Texas performance.
Yeah, Brian Heron, the man, the myth, the legend, claimed the 500-meter in that one as well. Texas is going to take the rest of the year off and then a couple of weeks in January as well. Back to Louisville, going to Kentucky again on the 12th and the 13th of January for the Rod McCravey Invitational.
All right, Gerald, now's time for some burnt orange lenses. We look through the entire world with a Longhorn tint on things. And the most immediate news, I think, just before we're recording this, it's officially announced. I believe it's been rumored. It's been understood. It's been agreed for a few hours, maybe even a day. But it's officially announced by the University of Nevada that their new head coach is University of Texas linebackers coach Jeff Choate. What do you think about this one, Gerald? I'm excited for him. Great opportunity. Get back to head coaching. Excited for him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty big coup that Texas got him from his head coaching job before, right? So like, that was a big move for him. He kind of showed up at Nevada and was very Jeff Choate. Like, he was like, ask your friends. You all probably know somebody that knows me. Like, who? What am I about? And he's like, they're all about you, right? And I think one of the things that, one, like, he's going to stay at Texas through the playoffs. Like, I think that's great. And that's indicative of, I think, what a lot of people think about the team and I think what the culture Sark is building. But one of the signs we've talked about this of a healthy program is your assistants getting poached for bigger jobs, right? And so this is now the third time that Sark has had an assistant get poached, right? Stan Drayton was a holdover from before, but now Brendan Marion and Jeff Choate are both staff changes because they got hired and promoted. Brendan Marion hired as an OC, and then obviously Jeff Choate hired as a head coach, right? It's like the big jobs Texas is becoming and back to what it used to be where you can go and get promoted. And that's how you attract the best coaching talent, is get your guys promoted into bigger roles. And so it sucks to lose him. I think Jeff Choate is a really good coach. I think the linebackers are one of the better groups at Texas, but there's the talent that Sark can attract and the checkbook Sark has to write from, I think will allow there to be minimal drop off there.
And the Texas coaching staff just really ensuring they have couches to crash on when they head out to Nevada, to Las Vegas, with Marion, of course, at UNLV and now Choate at the University of Nevada. I like it. Strategic moves from Sark and the guys there. But no, seriously, Choate has been a great linebackers coach. a guy who came over kind of with Northwestern ties. He was hard to get someone to leave Bozeman, Montana, one of the prettiest places on earth, when he was an FCS head coach of a great program there. But he came to Texas with Kwiatkowski and, you know, really did a great job with the linebackers. That's where we talked about, hey, you turned to Marvin Overshown, who was a tweener and a guy who had all the upside in the world, but was a safety moving down into an early draft pick who, again, a terrible injury robbed him of a great rookie year, but he'll get it next year. But a NFL player who's going to have a big career ahead of him. You know, helped coach Jalen Ford from a three-star up to a guy who's going to be a high draft pick.
Anthony Hill, freshman, shouldn't be that good.
Yeah, Anthony Hill, who's come in and lived up to every bit of the hype, which is hard to do. I think a lot of that obviously goes on Anthony Hill and his mentality. I think he's just locked in on football and a student of the game, and he does all the things right. But, you know, who's the coach who's giving him that stuff to that he's just lapping up right now, and you see his game growing? David Benda, a guy who's been in the program for so long and just took a leap, right? Which same thing we talk about with Flood for Christian Jones. When you have those guys, you know, who are long trajectory builds, but that you just see it click, you have to give some credit to that last coach. Of course, all the coaches who contribute to it, but when you make that leap, it's like, well, you're hearing something that's finally making sense to you, and hopefully, you know, the lessons where Maurice Blackwell seen a little uptick in his play towards the end of the season as well. Hopefully, we'll see that carry over with some young linebackers still on the staff. But yeah, give credit there for sure to Choate and the work he did. It'll be a big loss, but this is the thing about Texas. Now you get basically, if you have someone on staff, a really good staffer who you want to promote, you could do that. You know, Kwiatkowski could coach linebackers and you could promote some on the ends, or you could promote someone linebacker, but more likely you can go out and look at the best young up-and-coming linebacker coaches in the country and go pick one. Like, you get to do that because you're Texas and you have this opening, and you know, you're Texas. And so I'm excited to see who comes in there. We have a couple ideas ourselves. We'll leave those until we hear anything solid. So, Gerald, anything else kind of around? I know a lot has happened with the playoffs. Obviously, Florida State not getting in is the biggest news. But around the country, state of college football that you know, you want to touch on specifically?
This is a great year for us to be transitioning to the 12-team playoff. But outside of that, not a ton to talk about other than like the 1,100 entrants into the transfer portal in the first like 24 hours of it being open.
Yeah, it's been interesting, right? I mean, you've seen a ton of Ohio State people in the portal, which is, you know, they missed the playoff and a great exodus. You've seen a ton of Aggies, which is not unsurprising. When Jimbo left, of course, that was going to happen. Elko, you know, is
Robinson leaving.
We think a good hire and is you know, a good guy, but he wasn't able to retain their two best recruiters, Craig, the receivers coach, and Elijah Robinson, who's, you know, gone to take a defensive corner position at Syracuse. But like, so that legendary, you know, moneyed class, best class of all time, is basically evaporating before our eyes, including number one player in that class, the defensive tackle, Nolan. So, a lot of Aggies, a lot of, we've seen some big Oklahoma guys. I think everyone in their running back, I think they legitimately lost three of their top four, and five of their eight guys who carried the ball this year are gone from that team, including, of course, Dylan Gabriel. A lot of quarterbacks all across the country, a lot of quarterbacks in the portal, which, you know, I don't know what that means for Texas in their quarterback room, but interesting all the way
Texas
down.
Texas holding on to Malik Murphy just by sheer numbers. But Jalen Catalon, Xavien Bryce for Texas are both in the portal as well. Sark is actually kind of like shifting his approach to how the portal works, right? Because Texas is in the playoff and there is a later portal window for them, but a lot of times those spots will be full at the end of the playoff window. So Sark is letting players enter their name, but still remain with the team as long as they continue to abide by rules and do everything as they should. Jalen Catalon, reports are he's not going to be one of those guys. He's already cleaned out his locker. But Xavien Bryce was a guy who hadn't seen a ton of playing time, was a late flip from OU in that cycle. So, sucks to see both of them leave. Catalon, injuries hit him again, and then he kind of got passed on the depth chart. So, I mean, sucks to lose him, but, you know, kind of the writing felt like it was on the wall a little bit.
Well, we said when he came, like, man, what a ceiling he could add, you know, but it was almost, he was rims on a nice car, right? It's like, you know, he couldn't be the engine just because of the injury issues. He played 16.5% of all of Texas's snaps this season. In the last, from week seven on, he only played in the Texas Tech game. Didn't play U of H, didn't play BYU, K-State, TCU, Iowa State, did play 16% of snaps at Texas Tech, and then didn't play against Oklahoma State. So whether it's purely injury or anything else there, you know, it was always going to be, hey, it'll be really nice if we can get what we can get. But, you know, man, it would be nice to have just a little bit of experience as we head into the playoffs, have another body there, especially as you figure out what's happening with Derek Williams, if they appeal that targeting or if we're able to serve it at the beginning of next season. We're still trying to determine that. But if he's out, that really gives like three guys with any playing experience at safety to go against Washington for the first half. So it's a loss nonetheless. And we wish Catalan well wherever he ends up. One more chance to be healthy, to make it all work, and hopefully, you know, put that talent and that big hitting on display for an NFL team. The one bit of news, Gerald, I can't believe you didn't say, is the biggest portal news of all, Gerald, worth reporting, worth saying out loud, worth making a whole deal of, Arch Manning is not in the portal. Can you believe that, Gerald? What a surprise that is.
I mean, anybody that's had their finger anywhere close to the pulse, not trying to make chocolate covered pretzels, knows what's going on. The Manning family moves different. So, it's dumb that they had to like make a whole story on it.
Sorry. If you're not familiar, there was literally a story posted that Arch is happy. Arch isn't in the portal. Like, I don't know why. If we're doing that for every single player in the country, that seems like a silly thing to do. But yes, it's there is not. I have gotten, and I'm sure if you're a Texas fan and you listen to this podcast, you've gotten that question. Every casual in America knows the name Arch Manning and just assumes, since he didn't start immediately as a freshman, that he's transferring. It is stoked by message boards. I have a lot of LSU fans, people in New Orleans who
Ohio State also in there.
Yeah, who keep asking this, and it's just like, look, if he plays zero snaps next year, okay, you want to start the train, go ahead. But this is exactly what we said would happen. Gerald and I said on this podcast, everyone who covers Texas said in their respective mediums, and it played out exactly like we said. And so why is anything different? He redshirted, got to play a couple games, didn't necessarily have him taking victory laps in the Big 12 championship, but sure didn't hurt. I'm not worried about that. That's a silly story. But something that isn't silly and is amazing, Gerald, one of probably both of our, you know, short list of three to five to maybe one favorite Longhorns of all time, Derek Johnson, set for induction into the College Football Hall of Fame. When you're listening to this, podcast will come out on Tuesday. It is 12-5 Tuesday that he is being inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. The 25th Longhorn to be included, a legend at his time on the 40 acres.
Yeah, I mean, multiple-time consensus All-American, Nagurski Trophy, Butkus Trophy, 43-8. While on campus, like 458 tackles, 280 solo, like absolutely just his name. If there's a linebacker record, Derek Johnson's in the top four, probably. NCAA record for forced fumbles his senior year. A forced fumble is part of the reason why I ended up at the University of Texas. I was watching the Red River game, and you all know that forced fumble. He punched the ball out, and it went like 63,000 yards. And that was like, I guess I'm going to go there for school. And never seen a play like it. But ended up having a great NFL career as well. Like, just absolutely incredible. Longhorn legend, one of my favorites, and just a dude.
Yeah, absolutely. A guy who had a great NFL career, got drafted 15th overall, had a nice career. He's a Chiefs legend there. He's a good – he's moved back to Austin, a part of the community. You always hear positive stories about him and his family and their impact in the community, and then just on the team, right? He worked a lot with Jalen Ford this year. Like, that's what you want. These guys who are legends like that, both college and the NFL game, working on, you know, he worked with Baron Sorrell a little bit on his pass rush and swim moves, right? Like, those types of things are awesome. I love seeing our OGs stay plugged in, and good time to do it as well. As far as the guys currently on campus, four Longhorns named to the Earl Campbell Tyler Rose Award semifinalists. 19 total semifinalists, Texas, the only school with multiple.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because it's like the best player with Texas ties. So you've got players from all over the country. But Jonathan Brooks, Quinn Ewers, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy were all on the watch list. 19 semifinalists. And again, Texas is the only player with, team with multiple players because Texas Tech was not that great. I think they had Taj Brooks on there. Texas A&M maybe had one. I don't remember. But again, Texas was the... I'm not sure. Yeah, but... I mean, it seems like Texas has at least the odds to win it. It'll be nice to see.
From football to football, soccer's Lexi Missimo was selected as the Mack Herman Trophy semifinalist. That's, of course, the best player in the country, Heisman equivalent, if you will, for women's soccer. She currently leads Division I women's soccer in 7 different statistical categories, and if that seems good, Gerald, she's also top 2 in 3 additional ones. So in 10 categories, she's either number 1 or number 2. Give her the dang trophy.
Yeah, I mean, first person to lead the Big 12 in every offensive category. 72 points accounted for, which is the 15th best season in school history.
In NCAA history.
Yeah. Abby Wambach, if you don't know that name, you should, but she had 76, like, for context, her best year. So, like, great year for Lexi. Absolutely incredible run for the soccer team.
That's right. In awards aplenty, the soccer team ultimately had multiple All-American honors. Lexi Missimo, who you after that paragraph, you would assume she is, of course, named to the first team. Trinity Byers named to the second. And it was the, I believe, the first time since 2006, third time in program history that Texas has had 2 All-Americans in the same season.
Yeah. Lexi Missimo, Trinity Byers were the best or highest scoring pair of teammates, the only pair with more than 100 points. A big year for them.
That's right. And just closing out soccer with some burnt orange lenses, Florida State did ultimately beat Stanford 5-1 for the women's soccer title. That's, remember, the team that beat Texas, and Gerald and I said, well, they're probably going to win the national championship because they've beaten everyone. They're really good. Undefeated. They had a dominant season. The likes of can be put up against any team in any sport, literally in NCAA history. They're really, really, really good. I think they, they dominated 21. Their goal differential in the postseason only was 21-1. 21 goals scored, 1 given up. They just crushed everyone and waltzed to a national championship. Gerald, do you think that makes up for Florida State fans who might be feeling a little hurt after another undefeated team of theirs didn't get a chance to win the trophy?
As much as you and I love to hype women's sports, probably not even a little bit.
It does ultimately help Texas in the Director's Cup because the team they beat in that championship was Stanford. So keeping a few points off the board for Stanford, we'll have Director's Cup dates at some point. Our friend Brett, come give us some implications. Texas has just taken trophies on their way out of the Big 12, but Stanford's having a pretty good run at it as well. A couple more trophies in the Big 12. Maddie Skinner named Big 12 Player of the Year for the volleyball team. 4th consecutive Longhorn to be named the league's Player of the Year.
Yeah, Texas had her and Asia O'Neill on the first team. Ella Swindle also made it on the all-rookie team. Underrepresented, I think, on the conference team, but that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. I would have liked to see a couple more names. They did rotate a lot, and you actually saw, shout out to her, Melanie Parra from TCU made the first team after transferring there. She was a player who basically just got behind Maddie Skinner, which is a tough place to be. But good for her making the first team as well. Speaking of making the cut, no, that's a bad transition. Scottie Scheffler wins the Hero World Challenge by 3 strokes. My favorite sentence in maybe this podcast notes is Tiger Woods event in the Bahamas. That'd be one I would play, whether it's on an EA Sports video game or in the Bahamas, where Scheffler has finished as runner-up the past 2 years post-COVID, finally got the chip off his shoulder and got the win.
I mean, it's his 3rd win of the year, 7th tour win, and University of Texas's 99th win on the tour. Big ups to all the winners.
Yeah, I can't wait till Texas gets that 100. Jordan Spieth looked good in this one. Maybe he'll get his 14th. Maybe this is a galvanizing event for him and be the one to get the 100th. But money's got to be on Scotty. But who knows? Maybe Jonathan Vegas or Dylan Fratelli get frisky on a tournament and bring it home. We'll see. Current Longhorns in the pool, Noah Dupree and Bridget O'Neill took home the gold medal in the mixed synchronized 3-meter event at the 2023 USA Diving Winter Nationals. Texas X Allison Gibson also took home the gold with her 2020 Tokyo Olympics teammate Krista Palmer in the synchronized 3-meter. Both of those teams will qualify for the 2024 World Aquatics in Doha, and if you win there, you qualify for the Olympics. All right, Gerald, let's take it home with our closing two segments. We're doing both of these, remember, because one show this week. So we'll start it with a little Godzilla tron. What did you watch on your giant screen?
I didn't do a ton of watching this week. My wife and I, my wife was sick for a couple of days, and so she was down, and I was kind of just left to my own devices to do other things. I'm continuing my Yu Yu Hakusho rewatch, doing a little anime, and then I finished Legendborn, that audiobook, and jumped into the second one called Bloodmarked. It is good. Some of the social commentary. They're a little heavy-handed with the social commentary in it, which I don't mind, because it's like it's really like not a young adult but like a youngish adult book, and so like sometimes you can't be super subtle when you're trying to, you know, communicate those things to some of those people. But overall it's good. I really enjoyed it. It's very fantasy-y, but I really, really appreciated it. Yeah, that's it. That's really all it was. And some Christmas movies mixed in. I've gotten Curious George Christmas, Muppet Christmas Carol, and Claus.
Love it. We watched This Christmas, which, of course, launched Chris Brown into the Christmas music oeuvre. I hate that it happened because it's actually a great version. I'll still take Donny Hathaway's version any day of the week. But the movie itself is cute. It's nice. It's got a bunch of people in it. Idris Elba continues to do a passable American accent in it. It's an easy watch, a good watch. I like a good cheesy feel-good Christmas movie, and it is such. It's basically... what it is it's a Delroy Lindo vehicle. It is Delroy Saves Christmas, which I'll watch that any year.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think we do watch it any year.
Wrexham season 2 I also finished. Just a great show, man. I just love the heart and the intentionality that they take with it. Like, it's a lot of it is great drama. It's, hey, this team doing this sports thing, but a lot of what they do every season is like, you know, I talked about they had like a men's mental health during COVID episode in season 1. They had an episode this season looking at fans who are differently abled and the way that they've taken to making the watching experience for them, whether it's, you know, certain wheelchair access, whether it's, you know, quieter sections with people with earphones so they can, you know, not be overstimulated during the match. They looked at their star player as a son with autism and kind of went through, you know, that journey. They talked about one of the players who had a miscarriage and like his journey. They get into some real stuff. Like, sometimes we just look at players as in any sport as human beings who stand and do the sport thing and you know, walk off of their arena and wait for a week to do the sport thing again. But that's not how life works. And I really love that they dive in to the stuff that I really love about sports, which is the narrative and the good, juicy human stories that live outside of the gridiron, the pitch, the hardwood, etc. So really loved Wrexham season 2. Was worried it wouldn't live up after I loved season 1, but it was great. I'm going to be eagerly waiting for season 3 and beyond.
I'll have to check it. It's one of those that's like, it's on my list, and I've always got, there's always something that seems to slot on top of it, but like, there's what's not to want to watch about that. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, it should come as no surprise that Texas is in the playoff. Honestly, it was a surprise that they haven't been in that particular conversation in a decade. Texas didn't just start having capable players 3 years ago. It didn't come out of nowhere. It didn't just splash when Steve Sarkisian showed up. He said as much. He talked about, you know, when he analyzed what was going on, that wasn't a talent issue. We know what he came in and did with roster management and everything, but I think, Gerald, you're going to talk a little bit about the culture. So the thing that I wanted to focus on was, you know, I mentioned it before. He talked about love for one another, for vulnerability, for transparency, for communication. But one of the things that specifically he's talked about time and time again, and as a leader, Gerald and I both, you know, we've said do parts of this for our day job, for our profession. As a leader, if you want a culture, a group of people who you lead to adopt a characteristic, to adopt a trait, to live a value, you yourself have to live a value. And so that you ask, if it's not talent, if it's not purely roster construction, what's different with this Texas team? And Gerald, we'll talk a little bit about the culture side of it. But if I give it to you in just one word, it's accountability. Accountability to each other, accountability to your fans, to your university, to your boosters and donors, etc. But ultimately, it's just taking accountability, accountability to yourself. There was a play at the end of the first half, a flawless first half, where Texas was flying and everything was going perfect, where Mike Gundy did a little bit of gamesmanship, a bit of chicanery, and did the thing that he's done all year, where there's a loophole in the rule. If an offense substitutes, you can match that substitution and the play clock doesn't stop. So if you time it just right and you get this giant man who I noted earlier in the game, he lumbers at 1 mile an hour and it wasn't even on one of those plays. That's just how he runs. You can run that particular large human out there. Well, it doesn't look too odd if he ends up eating the entire clock and the offense has to take a delay of game. That is unless the offense has a timeout, in which case they can say, ah, that one's on us, call a timeout. This was before Texas was ending the half and ended up pushing Bert Auburn back 5 yards with a delay of game. He misses the field goal. Everyone on Twitter immediately jumped on it. Sark messed up, Sark messed up. Before they could fire their tweets out and get their Twitter fingers a-humming, Sark was heading into the tunnel for halftime and was asked on the way in by the halftime reporter, what happened? And he immediately said, that's on me. I messed up. Should have called a timeout there. Accountability. Like, it's okay to mess up. We're human. I haven't heard a lot of coaches, and I think that's where Sark is different, have that vulnerability, that transparency, and ultimately that accountability to say, hey, I messed up. Point it at me, and I'll be better next time. I messed up. You saw it. We saw it. Got to be better. Like, that's the difference. That's what I respect. Sark does it. His assistant coaches will then do it. His players will then do it. His senior leaders, the freshmen will do it. Like, that's what trickles down. That's what makes a change.
So let's just keep it on the culture, right? Sark talked about kind of before the championship game about culture and like what is culture and what makes up culture. And he talks about like who you are every day, or who you are sometimes is who you are all the time. And one of the cultural things that they really have is like love for one another. And anybody that knows me probably saw this coming, but I had to hold back tears on Saturday watching Jonathan Brooks stand in the backfield for the victory formation. We are huge Jonathan Brooks fans on this podcast. We've been fans since, we found out that he was coming to Texas, but seeing a guy who had put it all on the line for the team and really like been a culture dude as a backup, right? Like sat behind Bijan, sat behind, Roshan, saw Texas try to recruit over him with a 5-star, didn't get the start for the first few games and just did it all, air quotes, the right way, for his season to end the way it did, sucked, and we were all gutted for him. And now we have this moment, and that's what love is about, right? Like showing love for people and showing love for those around you, showing how much you care about it. And I think that Sark mentioned after the game that like he told the team that was going to happen on Thursday and everybody went crazy. Mm. Right. And like, that's just like what Kyle talked about, the difference being accountability. But like, I think there's also like part of accountability is having love for people beside you. Right. Like knowing that I'm going to do my part because I know they're going to do theirs and we're going to do it together. And so just seeing that was just absolutely heartwarming. I loved it. And it continues to be just absolutely just something beautiful. So that's all I've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the folks show you love on the internet?
You can show me love and question my accountability on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Gooder. Follow show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Talk about some stuff. I don't know what yet. It'll be a big mismatch of all the other things that are going on. We'll talk about Texas and Marquette. We'll probably get Gabe on in the next couple of weeks to talk about the, not Alamo Bowl, but the Rose Bowl, which is absolutely, Sugar Bowl, which is absolutely incredible to say, but we're excited to have it. Thank you so much for tuning in again, and until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Both my coaches have asked their fans not to boot in the past month.